husband, father, Elmo impersonator?
Yeah!
He wrote the arm and is currently writing its follow-up, the leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we make our way through a very busy Thursday. We talk some baseball right now with the man who breaks every story in Major League Baseball. You see him on the ESPN TV. Read him at ESPN.com. He is Jeff Passan, and he joins us on our Sprint guest line. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Excellent, Saran. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. I have no complaints. I get to watch meaningless Royals baseball coming down the stretch. And football.
How's that working for you?
You know, it has its moments. Like Soler hitting a couple of homers. I mean, and now I'm kind of intrigued since Mike Trout has decided to get a little dinged up. That I'm like, well, maybe the Royals could win their first home run title. So I've got intrigue there. I always love the play index on Baseball Reference and seeing how many second basemen. I know the Royals don't play him there exclusively, but. If Whit Merrifield were playing at second, I always love to look at the list of incredibly elite company that is around Whit Merrifield when it comes to the kind of seasons he's having for what a second baseman is. And I'm done. That's it.
It was actually very interesting. We're doing – so there is there's a series going on this weekend between the Orioles and the Tigers. And one of our editors thought that it would be a good idea to get a round table together to look at all of the really bad teams in baseball this year and sort of assess where they are. And this is the Tigers, the Orioles, Marlins, Royals, and Blue Jays, you know, the teams likeliest to lose 100 games. And I was asked, to assess, here's the question. Let's pretend we just put you in charge of one of MLB's worst teams. What's your first big move as GM? And I was given the Royals. I'm going to ask you this question before I give my answer. If you had one move to make as Royals general manager starting after the World Series, Saran, what would it be?
Boy, one move. And it works out for the betterment of the club no matter what, right? It's not just like, hey,
you certainly hope so, but right. It might not. I mean, it might be a total disaster because we don't know what we're doing potentially. But you do this in mind with making the Royals a better team going forward.
So, you know, that's a really open-ended question, which is what makes it difficult, makes it fascinating, but also makes it difficult when that assignment's given to you. I'll just say, so here's my quick thought process. One, it's, you know, spin Merrifield, spin Soler. I figured that's where you were going, but let me also say spend free agent money. Because I hear the giggle and I get it because the Royals are still, and we talked about this a week or so ago, you know, in your mind are still in the, you know, much more foundation to put together before you add on to it. But I do think at some point you got to get away. You got to break the cycle of build, and then, you know, maintain, then tear it all down, build. And you got to be constantly building and maintaining and not tearing down.
I totally agree with you, because the fallacy of not spending money in free agency is that there are great deals to be had,
yes,
and assets and value to be gained. You're telling me if DJ LeMahieu comes to Kansas City and is hitting 300, 375, 525, the Royals couldn't flip him this offseason for an incredibly good prospect?
No, I'm 100%. I'm with you, and I love LeMahieu. I've had him on a bunch of fantasy teams, and I had him this year. And by the way, because I went into a rebuild mode, I flipped him and got a lot of value for him.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I totally agree with you. Now, there is, we should both acknowledge, hey, if he'd signed for the Yankees for whatever he did, the Royals are probably going to have to go another million per year and another year,
sure,
to get him, or a couple million more per,
yeah,
year. Maybe he didn't want to be locked in because he wanted a chance to get back out on the free agent market. No, I'm with you 100%. And the one that really kind of irks me, and I don't think I've run this by you, is why the Royals, and I get it, he can be a pain in the ass, and I have never had to manage the man. But Mike Moustakas, in a Royals uniform, to me, I really need – I'll be happy to quit talking about it as soon as somebody gives me the, well, you know, he punched this guy on a road trip, and, you know, he took a leak on the carpet at the, you know, I want to hear where you know, he was just so bad that you can't at the bargain value. I mean, because how does Moose –
Seren, you're never going to hear that. That's the thing. There's no –
did it not exist or they won't say it?
It doesn't exist. There's no world in which Mike – listen, I know that they got a little tired of him. We all get tired of one another all the time. And if you're going to be in this game where you are voraciously searching for value at all times, then you bake that into the valuation. And I don't care how bad Mike Moustakas is in your head. And the truth is, he's not bad. Like, but let's just say that in your mind he's too much trouble. At $10 million for 1 year, that is well worth the trouble. Whatever trouble he brings, Antonio Brown is $15 million worth of trouble, and he's a billion times worse than Mike Moustakas ever could dream of being. So the idea that there's some sort of person, no. Don't buy it. Don't buy it for 1 second. And let me get back to – I'll read you what I wrote.
Please.
I don't think this is going to be up on ESPN, so everybody here in Kansas City
– Wait a minute. Are you telling me even at the mighty ESPN you do work that gets flushed down the toilet?
No. It's not going to be up. It's not up like right now is what I'm saying. I think it's going to be posted tomorrow. But, yes, I have – I bought the domain – GameStoryGraveyard.com for all of the great things that I and others have written that the game of baseball and lead changes have rendered completely useless. One day I want to actually get the website up and running because there have been so many great sentences and paragraphs that have been lost to crap relief pitchers. So here's what I say. Again, let's pretend we just put you in charge of one of MLB's worst teams. What's your first big move as GM? And I got the Royals, and here's what I wrote. Trade Whit Merrifield. It will hurt, of course, because Merrifield may be the most popular Royals player, and he's quite excellent at baseball. He is also incredibly valuable because of the contract extension he signed over the winter that will pay him $14.5 million for the next 3 years and includes a 2023 option for $6.5 million. It's the sort of deal that could fetch the Royals an absolute ransom when the free agent class at second base and outfield, not to mention the utility role, is perilously thin. Here's what seals it. At earliest, the Royals are primed to contend in 2021. And by that time, Merrifield will be 32 years old. Cash in now. Let another team bear the risk that Merrifield defies the aging curve.
I can't disagree. I think one of the issues, though, is that really cheap back-end number is based upon the Royals' handshake agreement with him that they'll rework it. You'll never see that. If you're earning this, we'll make sure that there's more on the end of it.
If the Royals are making handshake agreements with guys on contracts, then that guy is an absolute sucker. I'm serious. This is a business, man. And also, if the Royals are holding on to him because they want to honor that agreement, you're telling me that they're going to start paying guys more in their mid to late 30s? What the hell kind of business are you running?
All right, so let's back up then. Then did Whit Merrifield and his agent, with you know, maybe his agent kicking and screaming, maybe his agent handing him the pen, just sign a god-awful contract?
Whit Merrifield made himself richer than you or I ever will be. And that is what he can
– Low bar, buddy. Low – well, at least with me. I don't know about you, author of many books – but with me,
say, making that TV money these days. No,
yeah.
Whit Merrifield is generationally wealthy now. Like, hey, you know, anytime you got more than $10 million, I'd say you are, you're doing A-okay in life.
Right.
But if he had gone year to year with arbitration, he probably would have made more than that in 2 years. And I understand the desire when you're a guy who didn't debut until like 27 or 20, you know, 20, I think, what was it, 27 when he debuted? 26, 27 when he debuted?
27.
I understand the desire to grab the money when it's there. But when you look at what this contract has the potential to be, he potentially could have left tens and tens of millions of dollars on the table. Now, if this was what was right for him and his family, then I absolutely cannot quibble with him signing the deal. But if we're looking at it strictly from a value perspective in who has more to gain by this deal, the Royals clearly are the winners from that point of view.
Did he? Do we know he left tens and tens of millions, or does the DJ LeMahieu deal tell us that we've got the 1% and everybody else?
You know, here's the thing: a lot of the money that Whit Merrifield is going to be making is during his arbitration years, Seren. And arbitration is the place that pays players probably more than free agency now. So if you look right now, this year when he's making $1 million would have been his last pre-arbitration year. Next year going to arbitration, coming off of an all-star appearance and a couple of stolen base titles, and this year, an 825 plus OPS, you could have argued that Whit Merrifield was in line for $6 million. And then if he goes and follows that up, $9 to $10 million. And a year after that, we're talking $12 to $14 potentially if he keeps playing well. And then he hits free agency and probably is in line for a LeMahieu-type deal.
All right, so then what should the Royals do with Jorge Soler? We're talking to Jeff Passan from ESPN here. What do they do with Jorge Soler? We know he's going to opt out, because arbitration will pay him a lot more than the $4 million or $4.5 million or whatever the number is.
Well, now, Jorge Soler has an interesting decision, Seren, because if he does not go to arbitration this year, he hits free agency a year earlier.
No, does he? Because as I look at it, he's got this year and an arbitration next year for 21,
but
right?
Well, here's the thing, though. His contract runs through 2020, right? I believe if he gets to the end of that contract, he's a free agent.
No, I think he's still got the arbitration. The Royals still have the arbitration hammer on him.
I thought.
I might be wrong, but that's how it's been explained to me.
That may be right. The impression I got, though, was if he did not opt into arbitration, if he did not go to arbitration and just plays out this deal, then he could be a free agent after the 2000. I got to check that, because that's a big distinction.
Yeah, it's a big distinction. Yeah. And let's assume, because I know on like a lot of the contract sites, it's listed as an arbitration year. Like they think the Royals have the hammer on him for arbitration.
Right.
Maybe
right.
not. But so what do you do if you're the Royals? I've long said throughout the course of the year when he got off to a good start, I mean, do you sign him, do you trade him, or do you wait? I don't think wait is an option anymore. I think you either sign him or you trade him and you cash in your chips. I think the Royals still are trying to contend, and you're certainly not of this belief based upon what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. They still are trying to put together in their mind the last couple of pieces for a 21 contender.
Yeah, I think you sign Jorge Soler if you can.
Okay. And what's it cost?
That's such a difficult question, because guys of his skill set do not tend to get paid in long-term deals. Let's look at what he's doing right now. He's putting up – he's like J.D. Martinez light,
right?
He's like David Ortiz light. And if you go and look at what David Ortiz signed for over the course of his career, David Ortiz never made more than $18 million a year. Like, he was consistently in the 16-18 million dollar range. Hey, we're looking at this grading on a curve, Saran.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Come on. If I'm the Royals this offseason, I go to Jorge Soler, and he is 27 years old, going to start next year at 28. So I want to get him through his age 32 season. I offer him, and let's presume that they've got another 2 years of him through arbitration. He's going to make a lot of money in arbitration because the home runs, and because home runs are extremely well, like, highly valued in arbitration. So we're talking about, he's making, I think, $4.2 million this year, somewhere in that range. Now, $4.7 million this year. He's probably going to get a raise up to $8 or $9 million. So I would go to him and offer him, you know, $9 million for this year, $12 million for next year, and 15. I would offer him 4 years and $60 million this offseason and see what he does.
Okay. We're talking to Jeff Passan here in the program. Dave Dombrowski, you mentioned J.D. Martinez. He can opt out of the last 3 years on his deal. Dave Dombrowski has been fired for winning three consecutive division titles and culminating that with a World Series and 108 wins, and then a follow-up season that is going to be a winning record but not get into the playoffs. I understand all the collateral damage that was done as far as the prospects that were traded and the money that's been spent and the luxury tax they're going to incur. That's all out there. But, you know, is this the Red Sox just getting greedy that they don't understand? They think it's now easy to win a world championship whenever. So they're firing him because he didn't do a good enough job?
No. I don't think that's it. I think there's a few elements that are at play here. Number one, the culture in the front office there was not good. There was the feeling that Dave Dombrowski was essentially walling himself off from a lot of the really good things that they've got there, which is the analytics department and the international department. Okay. There's not a ton of cohesion there. I think there was a question about whether Dave Dombrowski is the right guy to do a reboot. And I don't say rebuild because I don't think like a team like the Red Sox ever fully rebuilt. And I don't think a team that has a left side of the infield locked up for the next 4 years in Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts needs to rebuild. When you've got two core pieces like that, you got a chance to win every year. But Dave Dombrowski's specialty is going out and spending prospect capital and convincing free agents to come join championship caliber teams. It's not changing things on the fly and being nimble. That's just not, you know, that's not been his MO in Detroit. That's not his MO in Miami. That was not his MO in Montreal. And he's been successful everywhere he's gone, but that's not his style. And ultimately, when it came down to it, I think they also looked at some of the contracts that he signed and said, we're in the situation we are right now, where we could potentially lose a guy in Mookie Betts who could be the best non-Ted Williams player ever in this franchise's history. Like, I don't think that's a stretch. Like, Mookie Betts could be that guy. He's off to a truly historic start of career in Boston. And because David Price, Chris Sale, and Nathan Eovaldi are signed for $80 million a year for three seasons after this year, it puts a financial pinch on the Red Sox to the point where signing Mookie Betts is going to be a lot more difficult than it would have been without those deals being consummated. And when you look at the return that Price has given them, which has been okay, but not $217 million worth, when you look at Eovaldi, who's been really bad this year and has a history of arm problems and frankly probably should not have gotten that deal, even if he would have gotten it somewhere else. And especially when you look at Sale, who's on the shelf right now with an elbow injury, with a contract that doesn't start until next year and that did not need to be signed this spring. When you look at all of those things, you can understand why there's some frustration about the moves pitching-wise that Dave Dombrowski made.
All right, Jeff Passan is with us. He is our Major League Baseball insider. You can read his work at theESPN.com. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute, KC's first and only hospital that's dedicated exclusively to orthopedics. They even have an ortho urgent care that's open 7 days a week for those high school football injuries that happen during the year. Find out more at kcoi.com or by calling 913-319-7633. And let's start you with this. What's your next book?
I don't have anything in mind right now because I don't know that I have the time right now.
Okay.
But have you ever read Lords of the Realm by John Hellier?
No. I think I own it, but okay. I've not read it.
Read it. Like, whatever you're reading right now, put a bookmark in it and put it on the second level of your nightstand and pick up Lords of the Realm. It's about the history of labor in Major League Baseball, and it's endlessly fascinating. And the behind-the-scenes power plays that are going on right now that are going to shape the future of baseball, I think are incredible and totally captivating. And if I could ever do a book on that, I think that totally interests me.
Okay, very cool. Next, Royal Stadium should be where? Where it's at
downtown.
Right now? The K, downtown or other?
Downtown, downtown, downtown.
Okay.
Do not build, do not spend another dime out where it is right now. I love Kauffman Stadium, but if we want like the full-fledged experience of what a sporting stadium can be, build it downtown, build the infrastructure around it, have the vast majority of it privately funded, because I think that ballparks are complete boondoggles for the city, and I don't want the city to get stuck with another bill when they can't keep the schools open. And let's make this the best stadium in America, because I truly believe that that Kansas City can support a stadium like that downtown, and that it could be the absolute jewel of this city.
You'd rather have Bubba Starling or Anthony Rendon?
That's mean, Saren.
I just like we always hear about
that is so mean.
Well, first of all, I'm a big proponent of Bubba Starling and the local kid and rooting for him. But everyone always talks about Lindor and, you know, and Baez, but Anthony Rendon was there as well. So, you know,
he was. Not only was Anthony Rendon there, but Anthony Rendon, like, was considered the best player in the country that year.
Yeah, best college player. Maybe one of the best college players ever. And
there were questions about his knees, and there were questions about his viability as a second baseman, which is hysterical because he's turned into an absolute world-class third baseman defensively, too.
Yeah, I just saw you talking about how he might steal the MVP coming down the stretch, and there he was.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He is. You know, he's going to be a fascinating case this offseason in free agency, too.
All right, and you're fine. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just think among some executives, there's a perception that Anthony Rendon sees baseball as a job as opposed to a passion. And I'm really curious how that manifests itself in free agency.
All right. And finally, your favorite type of barbecue. Is it brisket, burn-ins, ribs?
Burn-ins. And listen, I love pretty much all types of barbecue, but there's literally nothing you can say about burnt ends in terms of criticism. Like they are the absolute perfect piece of meat. They are bite sized. They can go with a finger pop or with a fork. They're immaculate. And when I moved to Kansas City and tried burnt ends for the first time, it was like I was falling in love all over again.
Yep, I hear you. You're the man, Jeff. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, my man. Take care.
New time, same team. The program with Saren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Listen, I don't...
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Who was the last pitcher to start and win three games in a single World Series. Now, Randy Johnson did win three games in the 2001 World. No, we did Jazz at 3 o'clock.
You weren't paying attention. That's all right.
My bad.
Because of
all
Jazz.
Right.
In the
sorry, I was looking at the sheet that was prepared for me.
We did. We flipped it because of the
Curtis
jumps.
Changed it midway through the show.
Might want to let me in.
Nah. What do you do?
Something to think about. Great Cajun food from Jazz.
Yes, absolutely. Three games in a single World Series, starting and winning. You mentioned your guess, initial guess was Randy Johnson, but he did win three games in 0-1, but didn't start one of those games.
Yeah, I thought Josh Beckett, I was thinking, but maybe it's just too quickly that he started. But no, I wasn't. What was it?
Mickey Lolich, 1968. Happened back-to-back years. Bob Gibson did it for the Cardinals in 1967 for the Cardinals, and Lolich did it against the Cardinals. Lou Burdett in 57. Those are the only three times it's happened since 1920.
Not bad.
But it's never going to happen again. Generally, John Tudor had a chance in 85, and he just didn't do very well in Game 7.
Jeff Passan says sign a new contract. He says 4 for 60. Is what he thinks it's worth. It's his 44th home run this afternoon en route to the Royals winning 6-3. If you're getting nervous about them scaring 63 wins, have you seen the schedule coming up?
It's a little tastier opposition, a little bit better coming up.
You think?
A smidge. It certainly isn't what they have been playing. They just... Before the White Sox, they played three consecutive series against the only three teams worse than them in baseball. Then they get the White Sox this week.
And then now and then, they take 2 out of 3 from the White Sox. They took 2 out of 3 from the Marlins. They took 2 out of 3 from the Tigers. And now they'll play the Astros for 3. They will play at Oakland for 3, at Minnesota for 4, home for the Braves for 2, home for the Twins for 3.
I don't think that the requisite number of wins to avoid a 100 loss season is going to happen.
They currently sit at 55-92. They have 8 more home games to play, but all against high level competition. Yeah. They have 15 games.
8-7. Not against that. Not against that lineup.
No.
Even the weirdness of September is not going to get 8-7 out of that. You're looking at 5-10.
I do think that there is something, and as I said, Jorge Soler hitting home runs and Whit Merrifield going for a hit title again, and talked about the value of Whit Merrifield in trade, but I think there's be something to be said to get the Royals' first single-season home run crown.
Yes.
And Mike Trout is due back, what, Friday?
Friday.
Or is it tomorrow? Tomorrow is Friday now. So I'm going to say Friday. For some reason, it feels like Wednesday.
It does.
He's due back, but it's a real race.
Yeah.
45-44. I think there's real value in that. First of all, in 15 games, I don't think he's going to hit 6 more home runs. I had him, but you know what? He's keeping his September numbers going better than he ever has. Usually September's a good month, but August is his biggest month. So he's keeping it rolling and putting up some big numbers. And listen, I'd love to see him get to 50.
441 today. I mean, so he's not just hitting the ball. These are wall scrapers. He is crushing the ball right now.
But they're going to go up against teams that aren't going to pitch to him anymore, right, though. That's right. The other thing. I think in these last 15 games, these are teams that are, well, I don't know, maybe the Astros are locked in. I guess they're playing for the one seed with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got something
and
to play
the
for
there.
And
the one seed overall, I mean, they're battling the Dodgers for home field in the World Series, too.
Yeah,
so they're,
that's true. So
they are pushing.
Yeah, I forgot that's how that's decided now. Yeah, so do any of these teams have anything to play for? Twins, are they? No, they're too far back to get the number one, and they're 4 up on the Indians, so we'll see. We'll monitor that.
Yeah, Braves are locked into the 2 seed.
Yeah, they're I mean, what are they?
Yeah, they're three back of the Dodgers, so they got a little bit to play for. Yeah, they're closer than I thought. I realized how good they've been playing of late.
So I guess, you know, maybe the Astros, maybe they all do have something to play for.
Yeah.
And therefore, no one's going to pitch to Soler.
Right. Now the last part of that, things are more settled in. I mean, by the time we get to the final week of the season, the Braves and Twins, or even the final week and a half, the Braves and Twins won't have anything to play for, and he'll get to go on a tear.
I think there's real value in winning a home run title, winning
Absolutely.
The first home run title for the Royals. I think 50 would be great. Listen, 48 would be great. Get it to where you don't have the lowest single season home run mark. I'd like to take that off the books. But 50 would be awesome.
I think actually Soler could get there. I'm looking at some numbers here. Since August 1st, he's batting 287, 408, 690 for a 1098.
Yeah.
But he's basically hitting a home run every 8.4 at bats. If he keeps that up, he'll end up with 52.
But how many have come against the chum that he's played of late?
That's very valid point.
Because those teams, it's not just that those teams aren't good. It's that they don't care. They're going to go try to strike him out to get better as an organization.
But even you mentioned the Astros coming in. Look at Verlander, who's maybe the best pitcher in baseball right now. He's giving up more runs than anyone. So I think that there's a chance. I'm not saying it will happen, but I think that there's a better possibility than it seems like you're giving it.
Maybe that's fair. I think there's a chance, but Verlander doesn't need to go learn how to beat big-time hitters. So why not just pitch around Soler? And, I mean, Dozier's behind him. I do think part of the number two thing when they hit him number two is when they do have him number two. Mondesi was number two the other day. But when they do hit him number two is to get him the home run title, get him the extra at bats. And I'm fine with that. I think it'd be an important accomplishment for this team.
Of his last 12 home runs, only two of them have come against teams with winning records.
And if nothing else, I do think that Ned Yost has a propensity for trying to get his guys certain accomplishments, trying to get guys saves, wins, things of that nature. So I think that like you said, having batting in the two hole, getting the extra at bats, I think that there might be something to that.
I don't think he's going to get there. I hope he does. I mean, I think it's the compelling thing to watch him and Whit Merrifield, and I don't know. I mean, it's going to come out in on ESPN.com at some point that Jeff Passan says you got to trade Whit. This is not new news here in Kansas City, and that's been the mindset for a lot of people. Is like he's your one commodity that you can move and get something for. But I don't see any signs. I think the Royals feel like they're not that far away.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to view it that way. If they're not, then they better get the checkbook out. And I feel very validated by what Jeff Passan said, that there is nothing in his mind. He's talked to, I'm sure, a lot of people. There's nothing to suggest that Moustakas is some horrible, you know, influence in the clubhouse, and you can't have him around. I don't know why it got so sideways between the Royals and Moose.
Yeah, I just in the drive-through last
night.
How
much better does this team look with him over at third and Dozier at first?
Much. As I sat there in the drive-through someplace last night, and I heard the sports, Mike Moustakas and pair of home runs. God, 33 now?
If you're going into next year and Salvi's catching, Dozier's first, Moose is third, Mondesi's short, Witt's second, and Soler's your DH. Mm-hmm. And that's three outfielders defined. I got that. Let's hope Brett Phillips, his turnaround, I know he hasn't hit really well since being up in the big leagues, but let's hope it's just a matter of getting comfortable. If Brett Phillips can fill one of those spots, you're two outfielders away from a good lineup. And if Phillips can be your Nori Aoki, you just need a Omar Infante, because everybody else I named is significantly better than Omar Infante, and that's what your 14 World Series team had.
Yep.
Had Infante at second and had Nori Aoki in right.
And
Alcides Escobar at short. So
yeah. You
can fill out those two. If you get a great defensive center fielder that can just have survival skills, you need one more. One of the other outfielders has got to hit, though.
And we remember Zobrist from the postseason, but they were a World Series.
I'm just talking about 14. Zobrist in 14.
Right.
And they were two runs away from winning the World Series.
What was in 15, by the time they got Zobrist, they built that the best record in the American League without him. So that wasn't just 14. It was most of 15. They didn't have anyone better than that.
Yeah. I'm it's sometimes, like when they win, like today, I kind of see the 21 thing. But more likely, I think 21 is 13. At best case, and 22 would be 14.
Yeah.
And that means Soler has to be extended.
Yep.
I mean, it's 4 for 16. I think he's undershooting it. If anything, and listen, I defer to Jeff Passan as the baseball expert, but if you said, okay, are you going to take that, what it would take for 4 years on Soler to be more or less than Passan 60, I'd say more.
Yeah.
I'd say more. Particularly if you're going to get an opt-out and do arbitration for 2 years. Because what's he going to get in arbitration? I say he gets 15, 16 this year and gets 20 the next. Or 12 and 20. I think his arbitration numbers are low. They're talking about Mookie Betts getting $25 million in arbitration. And that's why he's not interested in signing a long-term deal. He's going to get 25 in arbitration next year, and then he gets to the free agent market, and you got to pay open market, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper-type money. So he's not giving any 180 discount.
No.
I'll take the 25. That's a pretty good insurance policy.
Yep.
$25 million. Well, listen, Jorge Soler's not Mookie Betts. But he's a guy that can really bang the ball over the wall. And again, if Kauffman Stadium's this mighty pitcher's park, like everybody says, then he's going to get some extra street cred. And there's nothing about this lineup that says the guy's had huge protection. And as you pointed out, they are mammoth shots.
Yeah.
And he seems to be figuring out what to swing at and what not to swing at. Can we at least throw some love Dayton Moore's way on the Wade Davis? Maybe it did hamper their ability to get into the postseason at 17. But if you were to just take that trade in a vacuum, if, let's say, ownership said, move some salary, and he got Soler while moving salary, and I know Wade Davis hasn't broken down as many of us thought he might, although he has been hurt this year, I think that's a pretty good go.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Soler's splits this year. This was his 26th homer on the road against 18 at home. But even though the home runs have been higher on the road, he's still slugging .534 at Kauffman Stadium with an .887 OPS. So it isn't like it's not a Colorado Rocky where everything's on the road.
Right.
He's hit plenty of home runs and plenty of extra base hits at home.
So. What's the split again?
Home run-wise?
Yeah.
18 at home, 26 on the road in almost identical number of at-bats. He had three fewer on the road going into today, so there's within a couple there, but 26 and 18. But the slugging was 570 and 534.
If you play in a, league average minus the Royals ballpark, then he's on a 52 home run pace right now. He's at 52 and counting. But playing in Kauffman Stadium, he's at 44. I don't know. I hope he gets there. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll give you the things you need to know next here in the program.
A new way to end your day. The program. Now from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you
what you need to know. All right, some numbers here. We'll start with on Eric Fisher's
numbers.
Restructured contract. Included the conversion of $9.5 million in base salary to fully guaranteed roster bonuses that'll be prorated through 20 to 22, drops his 19 cap figure from 13.6 to 7.2 million. So they save 6.4 million on his cap number this year. Of course, Chiefs have $23 million. If they don't use it on anything this year, they can roll it over to next year and be able to, throw around some contracts next year or use a bunch of upfront money. We've talked about that a lot, but getting some details. Sam Darnold's going to be sidelined indefinitely after being diagnosed with mononucleosis. They have also quarantined him in his apartment. They don't want him coming into the complex. They don't want anybody else getting sick.
What the hell?
It would be awful in New York with sleeping in like a broom closet.
I'm quite confident.
Sam Darnold.
Darnold is not in a 200-square-foot pad.
Probably not.
400-square.
But he did get a disease you get made fun of when you were in
when
junior
you're 14.
High.
14. Like, what the hell is going
mono.
On?
He's got mono.
Derwin James talked to reporters today. First time since suffering the stress fracture in his right foot. He's in a walking boot. Says he does plan to return this season. They got him on the IR. He can return after 8 weeks. But if Derwin James is out, man, I know the Chargers got the win against the Colts, but they also let the Colts right back in. I think Jacoby Brissett's okay, but I don't see it as any badge of honor. Not being able to finish off the Colts, and not having him was a part of the reason why it happened. Redskins running back Darius Geis. You fantasy nerds that jumped on Darius Geis to be the guy in Washington. Trust me, I got him in a dynasty league counting $44 in cap room. Mm-hmm. Meniscus had a repair of his meniscus in his knee. He'll miss 6 to 8 weeks.
Bummer.
Hope you grabbed Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson. Thompson, the kid who catches the ball. NFL suspended Buffalo Bills rookie linebacker Terrell Dotson for 6 games, violation of the league's personal conduct policy. Okay. Nine flags were thrown in week one to enforce the helmet rule, the helmet to helmet. That's an 800% increase from the first week of 2018. The league had said that they will be more strict in penalizing the infraction 8 times, which doesn't even make sense because if they threw 9 flags, it would be 9 times more, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's 8 more. Be impossible to be 800% more.
Math is hard.
Am I wrong? I've always kind of wondered about that.
Eh.
Is 9 800% more than 1?
My general rule is if it's a math and it's you, you've probably got it right.
Okay. NFL drew a total audience of over 109 million in week one, 17.1 million viewers per game. That's up 5%. It's a good sign for the league.
Yeah.
I think people I was thirstier for football now than ever before. I don't know why that is. I think I get it for us because the Royals haven't been good. Mm-hmm. And we're now used to good baseball after we had a little pocket of it. And so we're not diving back into like, whatever, I'll watch the Royals no matter what. We needed something.
Yeah.
Sporting's off a little bit. I get it here, but I don't know why necessarily nationally that's the case. Shohei Ohtani, season-ending knee surgery. So we had Tommy John last year, now knee surgery this year. I hope his career – such a bright star. Mm-hmm. I hope his career doesn't end up going down the toilet. Yankees expected to have Luis Severino make his first start of the year on Tuesday. Aaron Boone said that on Thursday. That's today, by the way. I'm saying that today. Edwin Encarnacion left Thursday's game against the Tigers with a strained left oblique.
Obliques, man. Those things will last forever.
Yeah, yeah. And the Royals have claimed, I like this move, left-hander Randy Rosario from the Cubs and recalled Kelvin Gutierrez. And then they immediately put Kelvin Gutierrez on the 60-day IL so that they had room on the 40 for Randy Rosario. So you can't be IL because the minor league season's over. So they called him up to get him in a spot where they could IL him because 60-day doesn't cost you a 40-man to open up a spot for Randy Rosario, a guy who I wonder if we'll ever even see wear a Royals uniform.